Hello and welcome to the 2021 Sabre Virtual Analytics Conference. I'm Sabre CEO Scott Bush, coming to you live from Sabre's headquarters in Phoenix, Arizona. Over the next 4 days, we will be joined by experts from a myriad of fields to share cutting-edge research presentations and by professionals throughout the baseball industry to share their insights on topics like contract negotiations, the advancement of biomechanics, and career paths for team analysts. 2021 marks the 10th year of the Sabre Analytics Conference, and it is a testament to the growth and support of the analytics community that we have nearly 1,000 registrants for this conference, and nearly half of that group is comprised of students. I'd like to give a special welcome to the students joining us as Diamond Dollars Case Competition participants, Yoseloff Scholarship recipients, and those joining us through Major League Baseball's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion program. Thanks to all our attendees for being an active part of this baseball community, and we hope to welcome you to the Sabre Analytics Conference for another 10 years. This conference wouldn't be possible without the help of a host of others. Before we get started with today's programming, I want to take some time to thank the folks who've made this year's event possible. First, thanks to Joe Rosales, Mark Simon, and the entire Sports Info Solutions team for their work reviewing research abstracts and papers. We had a record number of submissions this year, and I believe we are sharing the highest quality research we ever have at the conference. Thanks to Vince Gennaro, former Sabre board president and co-founder of the conference, for putting on the Diamond Dollars Case Competition. Thanks to the Sabre Board of Directors for supporting the idea that communities can thrive in a virtual environment. And thanks to Tyrone Brooks and Ben Jedlevic of Major League Baseball for their assistance with conference programming. I'd also like to thank all of our sponsors, our presenting sponsors, Major League Baseball, Rawlings, and Sports Info Solutions, and our supporting sponsors, Baseball Reference, Rapsodo, Kinetrax, Hawkeye Innovations, SMT, Pocket Radar, the Colorado Rockies, the Chicago Cubs, and the Minnesota Twins. Finally, I want to thank the Sabre staff, Scott Carter, Jacob Pomrenke, and Chanel Zapata. They have been working tirelessly leading up to the event and will be behind the scenes all weekend making this event happen. Leading off the 2021 Sabre Virtual Analytics Conference is Brian Kenny. Brian is a host at MLB Network, where he appears across the network studio programming, including MLB Now and MLB Tonight. He is also the author of Ahead of the Curve, Inside the Baseball Revolution. A 25-year national TV and radio veteran, Brian joined MLB Network from ESPN, where he was a SportsCenter anchor, host of the Brian Kenny Show on ESPN Radio, and an Emmy Award-winning anchor for Baseball Tonight. In addition to all of that, BK was an early supporter of this conference and has participated in it for 7 of our 10 years. Brian, the floor is yours.
All right, Scott, thank you so much. I hope everyone can hear me. I hope we're all working virtually. It's a pleasure to be here with all of you. I'm always honored to be part of things here at the Sabre Analytics Conference. It's always a lot of fun. This obviously is different this year. Last year, we actually was one of the last things that happened on the baseball calendar, getting together on basically the last day and on the day after the shutdown for baseball. So we barely got it in and had to shut it down. But now we go virtually, and I'm sure there'll be better times ahead. But I'm pleased to be with you. Always happy to talk to intelligent baseball fans, baseball insiders and people within the industry that are looking for like-minded people and looking to learn more and pursue their dreams in baseball, because we love baseball and we love being part of this movement, movement that has swept through baseball now and has kind of taken it over in a lot of ways, which is the subject. I won't be long here. I'm just going to kick around a few things, because one of the more popular baseball topics these days is what hath sabermetrics rot. Last year at this time, when I say we, you know, the movement, analytics, sabermetrics, all the logical thinkers in baseball. So we say we, you know, it's kind of a collective we, maybe not all of us, but we as a movement were being blamed for sign stealing. This year, we're being blamed for ruining the World Series and having Kevin Cash take Blake Snell out of game six. And look, then there's a lot of blame to go around, and there's a lot to unpack there. We're also blamed for the three true outcomes takeover in baseball, which is part of, you know, understanding the reward system in baseball, properly understanding the reward system. So yeah, it's all true. It's all there. I like to talk about the Blake Snell decision. It's fascinating. I think it transcends just baseball and gets into how we think as human beings and how we are influenced by certain factors, no matter how independent we like to think we are. You know, as I wrote in Ahead of the Curve several years ago, and that book came out now, it's 4 years ago, now 5 years ago almost, we are herd animals. We follow the pack naturally. So even when, you know, the old ideology was this old school rigid ideology, now it's kind of this ruthless efficiency, new school ideology. And I hope it's not as rigid, but it seemed to be in game six of the World Series where Kevin Cash followed an ideology that he thought he had that even he wasn't following in the World Series. He let starting pitchers throughout that World Series face the order the third time through the order. For some reason, he didn't want to let Blake Snell do that in an elimination game when he looked, you know, as good as we've seen any starting pitcher look over the last year. Let's just go back for a second, just for context here. And let's go back just to 2015, the World Series in 2015. Matt Harvey convinced Terry Collins to stay in the game for the ninth inning with the season on the line. Elimination game for the Mets against the Royals at Citi Field. And he did so after he, remember this, looked into Matt Harvey's eyes and saw that Harvey wanted to stay in the game. Season on the line, even though Matt Harvey famously, written things on this all season, famously falls off the cliff at the magic number. 100 pitches, right at where we think starting pitchers should stop. At 100, it's just an even number. You can argue that if you want. A lot of the ball players outlight or John Smoltz that I work with, they do, but okay. Matt Harvey, like Pedro Martinez years before, he actually, yeah, fell off a cliff, became ineffective, incredibly ineffective at 100 pitches. He had just reached that point, and yet he went back into a World Series game with the Mets about to force a game six, go back to Kansas City where they had good pitching lined up and ready to go. They were not out of that World Series. Instead, two runners get on against Matt Harvey. Out he goes. A run would score. They tie it up. They go to extra innings. Kansas City would celebrate on Citi Field in New York City as World Series champions that day. That was in 2015. That's not that long ago where this inexplicable decision was made straight out of 1905. So, yeah, World Series 2020, the pendulum swings back the other way. I did a deep dive on MLB Now, on MLB Network, the day after Game 6. And I got it ready. My producers were good enough to get it set for us and get it ready to go to show you. I didn't realize it was 8 minutes long. And I won't do that to you. You can look it up. And if you're at this conference, you understand what was happening and all the parameters and all the things that go into proper decision-making, when to take your starting pitcher out. But here, I will show you this. Here's my conclusion so you know where I stand and where I stood at the time as it was happening when the Dodgers became World Series champions. Blake Snell was taken out in the sixth inning. I think it was 73 pitches, 5 1/3 taken out. Here's what I said on MLB Now the next day. So let's review. What am I saying? I'm saying you have a pitcher with ace stuff who is showing ace stuff that night. He, Blake Snell, is about to go through the lineup a third time. He has dominated the top half of that lineup thoroughly. And the guy you're going to with the season on the line, the guy you're bringing in, has given up at least a run in six straight appearances. Six. I'm sorry. I'm original Saber. I've championed the Rays' innovative methods for over a decade. But the sabermetric movement is not about numbers. It's about independent, logical thinking. If
Blake Snell had given up some hard contact, if he had shown some signs of fatigue. And we're talking about Nick Anderson, who is pitching in September, not October. Then you have a preponderance of evidence compelling enough to make you make a move. None of those things were happening. A 1-0 lead would be a 2-1 deficit by the end of that inning, and now the Dodgers are World Series champions. You can be a good manager and make a bad move. You can be the smartest team and outsmart yourself.
All right, there it is, the conclusion after Blake Snell was taken out early. And I'm not going to relitigate this. Again, if you're wondering, well, what's your reasoning behind it? I went on, it takes 8 minutes to explain everything. And I did do that. But I'm not going to go through it now because I know that would make everybody crazy. But here, it is a fascinating test case of our decision-making. You have a starter cruising, right? Throwing a shutout. Now, I know you're cruising until you're not. We know that. This audience knows that. But basically, Kevin Cash didn't want his starter facing the order for the third time, even though he had done that, I think, in 4 of the previous 5 games in the World Series. He had done it. He had let pitchers go through that, including Blake Snell. But it is fascinating to stop down and think, all right, the next 4 Dodgers that were due up, right, top of the order, the next 4 had gone 0-for-8 with 7 strikeouts. It's this extreme in the other way. It's not just he's getting lucky, the ball's falling into mitts, he's got this shutout going, but it's inexplicable. No, he's got these guys off balance. They're lunging. Again, I don't want to get into the eye test too much, but you could see he's got it going on. It's not just stuff. It's not like Corey Kluber at his peak. It's not like Gerrit Cole now or Jacob deGrom where his stuff is overwhelming, but you take some stuff away from it. You take some action. You take some velocity out. It's a different story. No, Snell is free and easy striking guys out. The first 3 in the order, including Mookie Betts, right? Dangerous guys. The first 3 were 0-for-6. They hadn't put the ball in play. 6 strikeouts. And yet Kevin Cash still did it. As if to say, I'm not buying the recency bias. And I think as we go, you know, post-analytic, you know, trying to make this real-world economics and real-world sabermetrics, I think there's a time for recency bias to say, hey, what's just happened? Blake Snell looks great. He has struck out the first 3 that he's about to face every single time he's faced them, every time. Our relief ace, Nick Anderson, does not look good. He's given up runs, at least 1 run, in 6 straight games. He's not coming in and putting out the fire, not recently. So that's, oh, it's recency bias. You don't know that. No, but you've got to use your head. And this isn't hindsight. This is, wait, you have to have, if it's you want to call it liquid analytics, fluid decision-making, whatever it is, you have to make the best possible decision at the time, given the specific circumstances. And again, back in 2003, this is not that long ago, the Grady Little game, Pedro Martinez was in there forever. I was at that game, 8th inning, over 100 pitches. He faces 5 extra Yankees. They're all getting hits. They're circling the bases, and he's still in there. Matt Harvey, again, 9th inning, 100 pitches. This is straight out of Christy Mathison, 1905. I mean, it's amazing what was happening just a few years ago. But now here's Blake Snell, 73 pitches, 5 1/3. The relief ace is shot. You know, he wasn't the same after going, I think he went 2 1/3 against the Yankees in a final elimination game in the division series. There's a time for recency bias. Be aware of it. Be aware of everything. Make your judgment in the specifics. And look, Kevin Cash is about the best manager in the game. We know this, not just ripping them, not just taking shots at them, but it is what it is. And it is fascinating. A middle ground would be preferable. And maybe we'll find it. We don't seem to be able to do it in other parts of the country, politics and red states, blue states, all that stuff. But maybe we can do it in baseball. I think there's room for that middle ground to use your inner computer, your feel, your gut, and also use all the evidence that is out there. Again, I did 8 minutes of it. I'm not doing it here, but it is there. I will throw this in though. Of course, you know, immediately sabermetrics analytics, you know, takes a hit when that happens, that this crazy wacky bullpenning stuff, taking your starting pitcher out. Can you see it doesn't work? Can you see it doesn't work? And yet, what did the Dodgers do in that game? Did anybody notice? I know you guys noticed, but I wonder if everybody else noticed. I pointed it out the next day. The Dodgers won the World Series doing a bullpen day. The Dodgers starting pitcher in game 6, how they won game 6, Starter came out in the second inning. Second inning, they used seven pitchers. The World Series champs clinched their World Series win by bullpenning. So it's not death to bullpenning. It's not a massive change in structure. It's just a bad decision, and bad decisions are going to happen. That's a brief synopsis. You know, are we to blame for all this? Well, yeah, I think we always have to be on guard to think independently, to think fluidly, think logically. It's not easy in real time. Enormous pressure for these managers. Some of the best managers in the business, not an easy job these days, can make these mistakes. And even if you have a whole staff around them, it can still happen. And it just did happen to the team that is the very best at all of this stuff. And that's the Tampa Bay Rays. As far as trends in baseball, just want to throw in a few things. The big question this year for the industry and for us at MLB Network, we do a series called Top 10 right now. And we rank all the positions, you know, position by position, top 10 in order by the best players at each single position. And we're, of course, wondering what to make of the two-month season. I'm sure everybody that's on a baseball team and on a major league team was thinking the same thing. This guy was great. Randy Arozarena, for example. What do we make of that? Christian Yelich struggled. What do we make of that? How much of it is real? How much of it is a small sample-sized theater? Well, now we do have other tools that we can use besides the results data. And this, I think, was a big step forward for all of that data, because you really have to wonder, okay, is batting average, is on base, is slugging, is weighted runs created plus? That's interesting, but maybe we should pay more attention to his barrel percentage, to his exit velocity, to his ex-WOBA, his expected weighted on base, given the quality of the contact. We should be looking at all these things. For a pitcher specifically, and you can see this happening on the free agent market now and has happened the last few years, they can be measured like basically up to the minute. What are you doing right now? We can look at your track record, but what are you throwing right now? The stuff, the action, the spin, the velo can all be measured precisely as to what a pitcher is throwing. And then as far as effective velocity, what is he throwing in what sequence? All these things make a big difference. We know guys now, we're post-FIP now, fielding independent pitching, where a lot of guys, not a lot of guys, but there's a number of pitchers that have a high strikeout rate, a low walk rate, and they're getting their tails kicked out there. Well, something's wrong. Oh, no, it's unlucky. It was, well, Edwin Diaz isn't just getting unlucky. There's something happening. It can all be measured, and you can look at this sequencing. You can look at the science of it, and you can look, again, going back to the craft of pitching. How are they throwing it? When is he throwing it? What does he have? Does he have an out pitch? All these things. And now you see that reflected in the free agent market as to, you know, you get a Rapsodo machine, you know, on Corey Kluber. You can tell, how is he throwing? Not just, well, he's popping the mitt. He looks good. He looks healthy, free and easy. No, no, no. What is the ball doing coming out of his hand? Where is it coming out of? What's the slot? What's everything that can be looked at? And that bears, you know, true fruit on the free agent market. We can see it with starters. We can see it with Corey Kluber. It just happened. And you can see it with relief pitchers as well, where the philosophy is now not to spend big money on relief pitching. And I don't know if that's right, but I'm saying it is happening. I don't know if it's true. There are a number of relief pitchers out there that had good results, but not good process data. And where's the truth in that? Like, is Mark Melancon still good? Brad Hand, is he still good? Kirby Yates, is he still good or great? And we don't know, but we need to start tracking this and see, is there a reason why this guy has lost some velocity? He's still getting outs. Or when a guy loses velocity or his stuff, is it time to get out of that business completely and not pay that player? I don't know if we know the answer to that yet, but we're going to get a certain direction for that very soon in the next year or two. Sabermetrics, you know, it is to blame for a lot of things that have happened in baseball, you know, the good and the bad. I love now, you know, it's a shame this year we're not going to spring training. I'm not physically going to spring training. MLB Network is down there and we're still doing 30 clubs in 30 days. But I cannot believe what it's like going to spring training these days for the past two or three years. When I go to a camp and there are so many open minds. There are so many And even like old school managers and coaches saying, hey, we're thinking about this. Should we do a six-man rotation? Should we do bullpenning? Should we use an opener? What should we use? How do we utilize our outfield? How, you know, platooning, what do we, you know, it's an open-minded business, which is terrific. It's much more of a meritocracy with people getting jobs in front offices where you hope people, good people will come into the game and be rewarded. It's a sea change over the last even 5 years and certainly 10 years. It's remarkable and it's refreshing. It's refreshing to see such enlightenment throughout baseball these days. And that is what's happening. And it's more fascinating than ever to cover. Now, as far as the play on the field, I'll wrap up with this. We've known this for a long time that, you know, sabermetrics, logical thinking leads to winning baseball. But winning baseball for an individual team does not necessarily align with a good entertainment product. Not necessarily. It can, but it's not right now. But that's not an individual team's job. That's not the player's job. It's not the general manager's job, the manager's job. It's the league's job. And that is, of course, what has to be addressed. I mean, it really does. The ball really needs to be back in play. Baseball became the national pastime because it was exciting. I welcome the news that baseball was looking to actively deaden the ball. Good for everybody worried about that. What, dead ball baseball? Think about dead ball baseball. They're not deadening it to that point, I don't think. It's not going to happen that way. But I spoke to John Thorne today, who usually I see at this this convention. We had him on High Heat. I filled in for Chris Russo today. We had on Major League Baseball's official historian. And I brought John on because I wanted him to talk about 19th century baseball, because those who have a knowledge of the history of baseball, especially in the 19th century, have a good knowledge of, you can change all sorts of things, where the mound is, where second base is, how far first base is, where the batter's box is, the bats, the gloves. And for everyone thinking that's crazy, you can't possibly do it, they did it all the time, every year in the 19th century. Every year they changed something to make it a better entertainment product. It can happen now. It has to be arrived at, you know, intelligently, maybe slowly, but something should change and should change soon. And hopefully with everybody on the same page, and hopefully the players will see this not as a negotiation tactic, but as a way of making baseball bigger than ever and making it the national pastime again and have it be the number one sport again. Because think about dead ball baseball for a minute. I mean, actual dead ball baseball. I did an essay on this on MLB Now. There's triples. Sometimes there's no outfield walls. The ball can just keep rolling. There's singles. There's bunting. There's about three or four errors a game. The gloves are small. The field might not be perfect. And and guys are running and hitting, and they're hitting it to the gap, and they're racing around, and there's stolen bases left and right. Guys are stealing 100 bases a season, a number of them. I don't know. Dead ball baseball sounds kind of exciting. So I welcome that. I welcome an open mind toward advancing baseball and making baseball more exciting. And if those people out there are going to blame sabermetrics, you know what's going to happen. It's still relatively new. There's still a lot of people that don't quite understand it, unfortunately. I think we can all do our best to explain it to people. And hopefully throughout this conference, we'll have that spirit. So once again, it's my pleasure to be here. I'm honored to be selected and asked to join in. Hopefully this time next year, we're all together and we're in a room and we can converse and talk baseball. I'm coming back, I think, in an hour, and we'll do analytics and contract negotiation. So I'll be back in a little bit. In the meantime, enjoy the conference. We've got research presentations starting now, and I hope you have a wonderful conference virtually, enjoying everything over the next few days. Thank you very much.